Good morning. Welcome to Genesis. We're glad you're here. If you're a guest with us, we're especially appreciative that you're hanging out. My name's Mike. I'm the preaching pastor at Genesis, and we're going to have a good time this morning, I hope. We especially want to welcome our guys here from World Changers. All these people in orange shirts. They are here this week as part of a mission trip with teenagers from all over the country. There's kids here from Texas and Georgia, and one that's from here in St. Louis on this crew, but they're from all over the country. They're staying downtown in a church downtown. They actually are going to put roofs on two homes in North St. Louis this week as a way to say, I love Jesus, and he makes all the difference in the world to me, and they're going to give back and just serve him by working this week. And I found out most of them, I think there's only maybe one, maybe two people here who've ever been on a World Changers project. So tomorrow morning at 7:30, most of these guys will be on a roof for the first time in their life, and that's a good thing. So we're glad you're here. We're going to be serving them this week. We will be delivering meals, delivering lunch to them every day this week. And this is for the rest of us here at Genesis. We still need a couple people to help us either help provide the meal or to deliver it or both. And so if you can help us out one day this week with either helping provide for a meal or especially delivering a meal, see me after church and we'll talk about it, all right? We did the song and we did the video because we're in the middle of a series of messages that we've called Everybody Loves Marriage. As a church, we really value family. In fact, it's one of our core values. We really believe that one of the greatest ways that we as a church can impact our culture is by building strong families. And the way you build strong families is by building strong marriages. And so this morning we're really going to be talking specifically to ladies. Now, guys, that doesn't mean you're off the hook. In fact, if you weren't here last week, I would encourage you to go on our website and check it out and listen to the message from last week because it was a challenge to you. But we're going to be talking about how God ordered and designed marriage and the responsibilities and the role of the wives this morning. My wife and I have gone on several canoe trips, and you have to know that a canoe trip for a newly married couple may be the fastest path to divorce. Because when two people get in a canoe, a husband and wife get in a canoe, you have a microcosm of what marriage is going to look like. And this is what happened. The first time we got in, I'd been on several canoe trips, and I kind of felt like the man. You know, I'm in the back of the canoe, steering the canoe. I'm in charge. I feel in control. My wife was up front, and she decided she was really going to help me steer and control. Next thing I know, we're going down. We hit the fast part of this river, and we are sideways heading right towards this huge tree in the middle of the river. And I'm screaming at her. She's screaming at me, get us out of this. There might be snakes. Oh, my gosh. And I'm saying, well, just let go and let me, you know, get us right. And she's paddling as hard as she can, and she keeps us going that way, and I'm paddling on the, and I'm pulling. It just didn't work. We were just like going crazy, and finally we got past there, and I kind of sat down and said, all right, here's what has to happen. You need to understand that the person in the back of a canoe, it's just, this is the way it works, right? The person in the back of the canoe has to be the one who controls where the canoe goes. The person in the front, their job is primarily just to keep us going, to keep their eye out in front of us in case there might be danger ahead and warn me so that I, in the steering the back of the canoe, I can lead us in the right direction. And when we're in safe, nice waters, for my wife, lay back and get a suntan. And I'll keep us going the right direction. But if you try to take over up front, we are going to be in a world of hurt. And so we kind of figured that out. We've gone on canoe trips. I think we've only tipped over maybe once together, and that time was probably helping somebody. But I have been on canoe trips with other couples. In fact, we went on a canoe trip with a married couple. They'd just been married for a short time. They went on this canoe trip. And the whole trip, it was a couple days. The whole trip, they just were not getting along because they could not figure out how to control that canoe. The wife was in front kind of yelling and screaming and trying to, you know, take the lead. The husband was in back just not sure how to handle it and just kind of wanting to give it up to her. And we watched them. It was amazing. The whole trip, it was a 6-mile canoe trip. They canoed 37 miles. Because what they did is they went from bank to bank to bank to bank all the way down the river, just back. It was like pinball, you know, just back and forth like this, all the way down the river because they could not figure out what it meant for the person in the back to steer and the person in the front to watch out for danger and just be part of the experience and let the canoe do the work. And so they kind of went down that river, and we got to the end, and we were still wanting to, you know, every time we'd stop at a bank, you know, we'd get out and we'd, swim for a little bit. We'd be at the bank for about 20 minutes, and then here comes this couple pulling up. We were ready to leave. They got there. We're hopping out, and they're like, no, don't leave. Please don't leave. We just got here. We're like, well, we've been here for like 20 minutes. We got to the end of the canoe trip. Everybody else, you're kind of tired, but it was a good day. They were exhausted and ready to call lawyers, okay? That's just the way it was. And I think about that, and I realize that this really is a microcosm of marriage. A lot of marriages that I have seen, a lot of couples that I've even counseled, as they were heading into marriage or as they were living out marriage, are a lot like that couple in the river where the marriage is just going from bank to bank to bank to bank. There's no real rhyme or reason. They don't really have any sense of where they're going as a couple. And as they go that way, it just wears them out. They're fighting and arguing because they just don't feel a peace about the direction. The current is taking them sideways and running them into trees and rocks and dangerous places. And they're just not sure what to do with it. And the reason I think this is so important is this. That I do believe wholeheartedly that God has a design for marriage. That God has really laid out a beautiful design for the way he has created this wonderful relationship. I'm nuts about my wife, okay? Tomorrow, we will have been married for 19 years. Woohoo! Everybody go up and high five and wish her happy anniversary. I figured out how to speak my wife's love language. We talked that a couple weeks ago. In fact, tomorrow's our anniversary, and she's been working on building this wall out front. And I said, I know the perfect gift for you. I'm going to take Monday and put my work away, and I'm going to spend all day Monday helping you finish that wall. And she cried. That's the best anniversary present you could ever give me. I just like, yes, it's beautiful. Marriage is designed to be a great thing. But a lot of times, for a lot of people, instead of two people living in a great covenant relationship, becoming one, they end up being two people who just kind of coexist in a house and they're not really sure how to get where they're going and where to go. And last week, we started laying out a view that I call biblical complementarianism, or that's not my term. That's a term that's being used a lot in theological circles, which is basically this, that the Bible is very clear about the fact that men and women are 100% equal, that God created men and women, Adam and Eve, in his image. But when he created them, equal doesn't mean the same. And when God created the home, he created the first home before the fall, before there was sin in the world, he gave the man the role of leadership in the home, or to be the head of the home, and he gave the wife the responsibility of being the heart of the home. And when a husband and wife can work in the context of that relationship, and they can grow in that and figure out how that means for them. No two marriages are going to look alike. There's not a manual that says, all right, the wife has to do this six jobs, and the husband does this six jobs, and the husband gets to watch ESPN, and the wife has to do... Every marriage is going to look different. But in the context of that, when a husband and wife are pursuing Jesus with all their heart, and as they pursue Jesus, as they trust him and grow in him, they learn how to function in the way that God created them, what will happen is that marriage will come together and will work. There's a verse in Proverbs. I love this verse. Proverbs 18:22 says, he who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. And that's the way it ought to be. If a man who finds a wife who loves Jesus and will go on his journey with him, he finds a good thing and he obtains favor from the Lord. We kind of live in a culture that's downplayed marriage. That said, don't get married, just live together, or just wait till you're 30. You're too young, enjoy life. And the Bible really values marriage. And so two people who will go on this journey together and they are passionate about Jesus, you will see them grown their walk with each other, their walk with God, when they functioned in the way God created them to function. See, God, you need some background. You need to understand what, you know, as we get to the passage that is so controversial that you know, just by quoting it, if this got out in the feminist movement, I'd be in trouble, okay? As we quote that, you need to understand why. Why is it that God created this structure in the home? And the reason is this. In creation, when God created everything that was, he created an ordered universe. He created a universe that had an order to it that fit and functioned. And in that order, he created Adam, and then he created Eve. And in the text in Genesis chapter 2, he says that when he created Eve, he created a helper that was suitable for Adam. A lot of times you'll read that and you'll be like, oh, that's just wrong. He created a slave. And that's not what is being said there. A helper suitable for Adam is incredible picturesque language in the Bible. Because it's two words and it means this. The first word means one who completes him. And the second word means but one who's the opposite of him. Now think of that. What the Bible is saying is that God made Adam in his image. And then God took from Adam a rib and made a woman, Eve, in his image. And when he made Eve, he made the woman, he made somebody who comes alongside and completes him, but is really a lot different from him. But what happened? That is the order that God created. But Adam and Eve, and you and I, we have chosen our own way. We choose sin. We choose to break relationships. And the order that God created, everything in us now tries to fight that order. And so men, they don't take their role of leadership. Or if they do, they're domineering and they're ignorant and they're abusive to their wives. And that's just pathetic. And women are, you know, kind of the model in our culture for what it means to be a woman, are strong, independent women who almost scream at the top of their lungs, I don't need a man. And the Bible's bottom line says, listen, it's not good for man to be alone. And so we end up with role models like Rosie O'Donnell, like Hillary Clinton, just, you know, all kinds of people in our culture that when we say, hey, what does it mean to be a woman in our culture? Instead of pointing to women who love Jesus, who have a passion for him, who understand that God has created them as in the context of this relationship to complete their husband and be part of a great relationship, we point to women who kind of denigrate marriage, denigrate a woman's, you know, role and responsibility in that, and we exalt kind of the exact opposite. And so then we end up in a culture where we're not sure what to do because it just doesn't fit anymore. It doesn't work anymore. And so now the divorce rate's way over 50% in the church, and people who call themselves Christians who say, I love Jesus, the divorce rate is higher with us than it is in the general culture. And we can't figure out why. And I really believe wholeheartedly that a lot of the reason that marriages are not working and falling apart in our culture is that we have forgotten the order that God created, and we are not living in that. We're trying to fight it. And so men don't lead. Women don't fulfill their role of submitting, which we'll talk about in a minute, and fitting, and it just doesn't work. And here's why it's such a big deal. Because everything, do you got that? Everything about the order that God created is a picture of him and should point us to him. And so when you read the Bible and you read about marriage and you start walking through the Bible as it talks about this relationship, it's like over and over again, the Bible reminds us that this relationship with your wife, ladies, this relationship with your husband is not just about that relationship. It is something that points you past that and pictures the greater reality of Jesus and his love for you and the fact that we need the people who are wholeheartedly submitted to him. Life does not work when I rebel against God. Life will be like going, you know, backwards on a cat when you try to pet it. If you pet it the right way, it's good. You pet it the wrong way, it gets agitated. Life is like that. When I am following Jesus and submitting my life to him, God brings peace and purpose. I'm not saying life is perfect. It's not. But even in the midst of the hardest times, you will find Jesus. But on the other hand, when I find I have a rebellious heart that rebels against the order of God, and I said, listen, I don't care. I want my own way. I'm doing my own thing. As I fight against that, my life, my marriage, my children, my work, it just doesn't click. And the reason is that God, in the cross of Jesus Christ, his design is to bring back the order that he created back with Adam and Eve. And marriage is one of those places. Now, there's a really long introduction to say, okay, so men, lead. I'm not talking to you so much this morning. I'm really wanting to talk to the women and the wives and even the single ladies in here to challenge you to understand your role, to live in it. And what I really want, I have to do this because a man standing up here doing this will be really sexist if I don't say it right. Ladies, I want to tell you, I'm terrified. It's a lot of sermons I preach. I'm up here ready to shake my Bible and go. I'm like freaked out this morning because I don't want to offend you with anything that's from me. So I really have to tether it to the Bible and the scriptures. I want to show you in the scriptures what it says. I just want to encourage you that as you seek God's purpose for your life and you grow in your walk with Jesus, if you will really deal with what the Bible says about the order and how you're supposed to fall into it and fit in it, and you will seek in your marriage how to live that out, it'll work, it'll make sense, even if, and this is one of the things we'll get to, even if your husband's a no-good son of a gun who doesn't lead and he's out drinking and partying or he wants to watch ESPN 24 hours a day or play video games 18 hours a day. And so I just want to challenge you to see what the text says and begin to say, not how can I change my man, but how can I become the woman that God has called me to be? Single ladies, hear me. What do you need to do as you're hearing me this morning to start building into your life the character of this person? Because this is what happens a lot of time. A girl will be in high school and college and will become Miss Independent. I'm going to rule my world and I'm going to get a, you know, I'm going to go to college and I'm going to do all this stuff. I listened to a person interview one girl who was a Christian girl and she was in college and he asked her, why are you in college? This was her response. I'm in college to prepare for a job because one day my husband might divorce me and I need to be ready for that in case I have to work. That is not the way to go into marriage. That is not the way to build character into your life. It's nothing great. Go to college, ladies, you should. It's not what this is about. But what I'm saying is begin to build the character of, we'll look at this in a little bit, a woman like the one in Proverbs 31 in your life even now before you even find a guy. All right? And so what I want to do, what I hope to do this morning is look at a couple biblical passages that deals with this. And as I look at a couple biblical passages, I'm going to go in a couple, like three different directions. I'm going to talk a little bit to you ladies about what it might look like and where you might figure out how, what it means to submit to your husband and what that means, okay? And I know most of you are like, listen, I'll get to it in a minute. It's not what you think, I hope. The second thing is that I hope to look at ways that a lot of times the order of the home is undermined. And then I'm going to answer some questions that you may have about what I say, okay? And so if you have your Bibles, we're going to be in Ephesians chapter 5. We'll be in verse 22. And then we're going to turn over to 1 Peter chapter 3. If you don't have a Bible at the end of your row, we have some for you. We'd love for you to take that. If you're at the end of a row, pass those down so everybody can have a Bible this morning. If you don't have a Bible, like, hey, World Changers, guys, if you left your Bible at home, that's our gift to you. Take it with you. Enjoy it. Or if you guys would like to take a couple of those this week and give them away to people in your neighborhood, we would love that, okay? We buy these to give them away. So people can have the Bible in church, but also so that they can have the Bible in their home and read it themselves. And so if you're here and you don't have one, make sure you get one, and you're more than welcome to take that with you. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 22. I'm going to read these two passages. We're going to try to unpack them. Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church, the body, and is himself its Savior. Now as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit to everything to their husbands. All right, now flip over to 1 Peter chapter 3. And I forgot to ask for that passage. When somebody gets there in one of those Bibles, tell me what page it's on. 1 Peter chapter 3. 873. Turn that page 873 in one of our Bibles, all right? 1 Peter chapter 3. Likewise, wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if some of them do not obey the word, they may be won without a word by the conduct of their wives. When they see your respectful and pure conduct, do not let your adorning be external. The braiding of hair, the wearing of gold, or the putting on of clothing. But let your adorning be in the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable beauty of the gentle and quiet spirit, which in God's sight is very precious. For this is how the women, how the holy women who hoped in God used to adorn themselves by submitting to their husbands. As Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, and you are her children, if you do good and do not fear anything that is frightening. All right, both passages, wives submit to your husbands. Like I said, it's a real controversial idea. It seems like the church is trying to put women in their place. I don't believe that at all. I actually believe in strong women who love Jesus. But the word submit in this passage, and actually all through the Bible, it's used 7 times in the New Testament in reference to the relationship of wives and husbands. And the word submit is a voluntary, that's big, okay? Voluntary act of giving up one's own rights to place oneself under another person's authority. The word and its very idea in the original language is a recognition of order and where I fit in that order. And the Bible says that God has placed the primary responsibility for being in the back of the canoe on the husband. It is his primary job to set the course for the family. God will hold us responsible, guys, for that. And he has left that with the husband in the home. And the role of the wife in this is that she is to be a equal partner in the relationship, but she is not to be somebody who is constantly combating the order that God has placed. That she is voluntarily. My dad used to look at my mom and say, "Woman, submit." I'm going to tell you, by him saying that, it was sexist, yes, and it was an attitude that totally robbed from the passage the very meaning, because the idea of placing yourself under authority in the context of the home, being in the order that God created, has to be something that is done voluntarily by you. The very word and the tense that it's used in every text implies that directly. If you are in a situation, ladies, where you're being forced into something, that's not what this is talking about. It ought to be a heart that says, "I understand that God is a great, sovereign, wonderful God, and I trust him. And I am willing to follow my husband's leadership and to respect him and to make him feel like he is a great man. And I will be part of this home." It says in both passages, wives, submit to your own husbands. It doesn't say wives, submit to all the other men around. It doesn't say that at all. It is always in the context of this covenant relationship, okay? And so what I want to do, I hope you understand that this, all these texts talking about this are talking about order as God's created it and how we fit, how two people who are equal fit in a relationship. But what happens? A lot of times in homes, you have a man who leaves and abdicates the leadership, or a wife who fights the leadership, and it becomes so tension-filled and it just doesn't work anymore. God's trying to help us have great, wonderful marriages. And so, here we go. First thing I want to do this morning is talk about ways that you can fulfill your role. From these texts, ways that a wife really can fulfill this role in the context of a relationship. And we need to understand that God created women generally to have more of a homeward orientation. Men generally have more of a working business, being out in the marketplace orientation. And women have more of a homeward orientation. That's kind of the way it's created. I am not saying that it's wrong for a woman to work. Nor am I saying that a man should be a selfish pig who comes home and sits around while he directs his wife to clean and cook after she's been at work all day. But what I am saying is that generally this is the way we're wired as God created us. And in the context of that, the first thing I want to encourage you ladies to do is follow your husband's leadership. Follow his leadership. It says, wives, submit to your own husband. I've come to realize this, that most men marry a woman thinking she won't change, and she does. And most women marry a man thinking she'll change him, and he doesn't, right? Most guys, you know, you're with this girl, and she was just this sweet, you dated her. Man, she respected you. She made you feel like you were the hunk of her dreams. We all had hair that was brown or dark thin, and we all had bodies where the larger part was up here and the smaller part was down here. And our you know, fiancés, our girlfriends looked at us, and you could just see it in their eyes. I would just do anything for you. And we said, this woman, forever, she's just going to be like this. And as pigs, you know, we thought, you know, I'm going to be with her. She is, you know, I'm going to wait till marriage because that's God's plan. But after marriage, man, woohoo! Katie barred the doors all the time. And then we got married, and it's like, who are you? I don't remember this person when I dated you, you know. But in the meantime, the women saw their man as a project. Guys, from the time you met your wife, if you're married, she has been training you. She has been training you. For example, I was in bed the other night, and my wife went, I'm thirsty, I need a drink. And you know what I did? I got up and walked down. I was about halfway down the stairs, and I went, why did I get up? And I realized, 19 years, I've been trained. She has been training me. But here's the bottom line. Men are pigs, okay? You're not going to change us all the way. We are always going to be pigs. But see, this is what happens. A lot of times, it's this kind of mentality. Wives marry a woman thinking she won't change, and there are going to be changes. A wife thinks, I have a project I'm going to turn this guy into, and then he doesn't become that guy, and we don't know what to do with it. And so here's the deal. Guys, keep falling in love with your wife over and over again, but I'm talking to you ladies today. You need to respect your husband as he is today. Unconditionally, lovingly respect him, even if he's not the leader that you hoped that he would be. You begin to love him and follow his leadership, even when it's hard to figure out what that is. Because that's what it means to voluntarily put myself under the authority or leadership of another person. And so follow your husband's leadership. The second thing is find your value from your husband's eyes. I want you to see this. Chapter 3, verse 3 and 4. He says, do not let your adorning be external. The braiding of hair, the wearing of gold, or the putting on of clothing. But let your adorning be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which in God's sight is very precious. Self-esteem is a big deal. I'm not up here to argue whether or not self-esteem is good or bad. What I'm saying is a woman, for any woman, whether she's 15 or 50, there is this constant struggle of looking at myself through my own eyes and being uncomfortable with what I see. It doesn't matter the age of any post adolescent girl to any woman walks by the mirror and turns and looks at her butt in the mirror. It's true, right? And the reason is because there is this sense in which I have to feel a certain way about myself, and I never can get to feeling that way. And so what Peter is saying here, Peter is talking to people in a culture where a lot of these people he was writing to, the woman had become a Christian from a pagan culture, and the husband hadn't, and she was still in this home, or the husband had become a Christian and the woman hadn't. But he's speaking to those who are believers, probably living with somebody who's not a follower of Jesus. And he's addressing this fact that how is it that women tend to get their sense of self-worth? More makeup, more jewelry, more gold, more shoes. And so you end up with a closet with 800 pairs of shoes, and you got all this jewelry, and there's gold everywhere. And he's speaking into a culture that this was just as common there as it was here. He does not say, ladies, quit wearing makeup and jewelry, go out looking blah. No, that's not what he's saying. Some women really need the makeup, okay? Let's be honest, okay? Some women really do. Now, I'm not talking about here. You guys look great in these lights. I can't see you, so you look wonderful out there. But some of you, the gold earrings and the gold stuff, you know, now I'm not a big fan of like, you know, this and that. But some guys like it. If they do, go for it. But what he's saying is don't let your adorning, that word adorning is very interesting because it's the Greek word for world. Here's what he says. Do not let your world revolve around what you wear and what your face looks like and what your hair looks like, what your ears look like. Let your world revolve, your adorning be the beautiful, wonderful woman of the heart who is in love with Jesus. That's what he says here. Literally, it's what he says. And when your world becomes being in love with Jesus, there will be this inner beauty that shines that every husband will see. And when the husband, whether he's a believer or not, begins to see that beautiful heart, he will be drawn to that. And all of a sudden, you get your value not from the external, but you get your sense of value from how your husband sees you. If your husband likes gold jewelry, you need to wear it, but that's not the most important thing. Let your adorning be the beautiful woman of the heart who's full of gentleness and love. And this is what it says. That is what God, and the word says, the word, the text literally says, God places his highest value. It is worth a lot of change to God when a woman has this beautiful spirit in her heart. And God will respond to that even with a man who won't lead, who's a no good son of a gun, who is a drunk or an idiot. A woman who will have this beautiful spirit, God will use that spirit because God values it to change the guy. It's a great text. It's a great text. And so, you know, find your value from your husband's eyes. The third thing is speak respect into your husband's life. Back over to Ephesians 5:33, the last verse of the passage there, he's been talking to husbands primarily about their leadership, about the fact they need to love their wives as Christ loved the church, and he gave himself up for her. But he ends the passage with this. He says, chapter 5, verse 33, he says, however, let each one of you love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. And I've already said it, I'm just going to say it again. Ladies, find ways to speak respect in your husband's life constantly. Make them feel like you're Superman. Make them feel like they are the, even when they're not, make them speak respect into their lives. When you do these things, you become a beautiful image of Christ and his church, of the love that we as his people have for Jesus and his love for us and the response. And this becomes an image of that, which is why there's an order to it. So how sometimes do women undermine that? There's some ways, a lot of ways, and I'm not going to deal with these in length, but I'm just going to touch on them, okay? First of all, women can undermine the husband's leadership with her actions. With her actions. There's a lot of ways that this can be done. In a lot of relationships, women use the heart language of their husband to control them. So it might be sex, it might be food, it might be the children. They use those things to kind of control the relationship. Those actions are undermining leadership. Another way that sometimes this will happen is it'll become, you know, a big fight in the home or a big battle, and the wife goes and does everything she can to get the kids to side with her. And it's like the husband's off working way too many hours than he is, and he needs to be more dedicated to the home. But it becomes me and the three kids against you. And that's undermining the leadership, some actions. Another area is with words. you know, the constant nagging. Book of Proverbs talks a lot about this kind of stuff. Proverbs chapter 25, verse 24 says, I love this. This is real practical, okay? It is better to live in the corner of the housetop than with a house shared with a quarrelsome wife. This is a guy who has figured out that the best place to be is working on the corner of the roof. He's just, you know, any place but inside the house. And so he's almost like set up a little shack where he's just out working on the corner of the house all day, because that is way better than going in and hearing the nagging of his wife. Sometimes you undermine leadership, ladies, by complaining and demeaning. Your efforts to get your husband be the guy you want him to be, it's just this constant complaining and putting him down and hurting him. And instead of respect and building him up and making him feel valued, he feels just senseless and worthless. Gossip. Group of ladies are sitting around the table, and everyone is going, well, my husband is just, you know, he's driving me crazy. He works all day. Well, my husband, he comes home and he plays, you know, video games just nonstop. That's all he wants to do. Well, my husband, oh my gosh, you would not believe what my husband. And it becomes this little powwow. And then Christian women are good. It's, I have a prayer request. Pray for my husband, because he's a bum. You know, this is kind of the gossip. Look at this passage. In Proverbs chapter 12, verse 4, it says, an excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who brings shame is like rottenness in his bones. Ooh. Pretty direct and pretty intense there. Third area is with priorities. And the way that this shows up the most, I think, ladies, is that a lot of times, remember that your relationship with your husband is the most important relationship. A lot of times women can undermine the value of that relationship by exalting family to the same place as marriage. And you need to love your husband and respect him first, but that's hard. Now, men, our tendency is to turn to work. But ladies have a tendency that all of a sudden, a guy married a wife and he's lost his wife to the bigger clan. And there are some times where you need to put the kids to bed, get a babysitter, whatever it is, and make sure you focus on him. All right, enough said with that. Let me answer some questions, because anytime you bring this up, there's going to be some questions, and then we'll close. And so I just want to answer these. First of all, what if my husband is not a Christian? Okay, I'm here. I hear what you're saying about submitting, but my husband's not a Christian. Do I follow his leadership? And the answer is absolutely. In 1 Corinthians 7, it teaches us, the Bible's clear that if I'm in a relationship, if I'm a follower of Jesus, and I'm in a relationship with somebody who's not, God's design is for me to stay in that relationship and live my purpose there. In the passage we read earlier, in 1 Peter chapter 3, he said, wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if some of them do not obey the word, they may be won without a word. Yes, you continue. In fact, I love what he says here. It's not stay in the relationship so you can complain and nag and get him to the point where he becomes the guy he needs to be. He says, so be submissive so that if they don't follow Jesus, they can be won without a word. Wow. So the answer to that question is yes. Second question, what if he won't lead? What if he just won't lead? What if, you know, I love Jesus. I want my kids to be in church. He will not take us. He will not pray with us. And this is a really, really hard question that you're going to have to pray through and wrestle with and deal with. Because on one hand, it is very important for women to get their kids to church and get them involved and to love Jesus. But it's a very small step to go from that to completely writing him out of the equation. And now it's me and the kids, and my husband is just this person who lives in the home and pays the bills. And my challenge is figure out a way to do that while you still respect him and honor his leadership in the home. All right, the third question. What if he's leading me to do something that is sinful? What if my husband is just, you know, in his leadership, he is leading me to do something that's contrary to God's purpose and will. Once again, the scripture is very clear. You follow Jesus first. You follow Jesus first. anybody, I don't care who it is on this planet, who asks you to do something that's contrary to God's purpose and will in your life, that's where you draw the line and say no. Next question. What if I disagree with his leadership? This is the hard one. Ladies, you trust in a God who is sovereign, and you fulfill his purpose for you. God honors his order. And if I'm not careful, I will be so passionate about seeing something happen in somebody's life that now I'm dishonoring the way God created us. And then I don't know why it's not working. That's not a formula. I'm not trying to give you a formula. I'm just saying, honor God's purpose in your life. What if he won't listen? That passage we just read out of 1 Peter, without a word. Just keep praying for him. Keep trusting. Keep letting God be the one who brings the change. What if he's abusive? It's a big one. The answer is get out of that home. Now, I'm not talking about divorce yet, but I am saying you need to protect yourself and the kids. Abuse is not leadership. And being abused is not being submissive. Okay? As unto the Lord. Trust Jesus. Find a way to work through it. Get counseling. Get help. We will help you. But don't stay in a situation where you, your kids, are endangered. But we want to honor God with all this stuff. All right. I hope I've been kind of challenging and clear. I want to tell you that this doesn't mean, ladies, that you give up your personality. This doesn't mean that you don't have a chance to be involved in the discussion about the direction of the home. It does mean sitting in the front that you are pointing out the dangers and the traps and what's up ahead so that we don't end up flipping the canoe because the husband wasn't aware and wasn't involved. But it does mean that God's design and order works. The two people complete one another. I was at a funeral this week, and I saw a couple. They've been married close to 60 years. Name are Jim and Dorma. They are great people. I've known them for probably 20 years now, 25 years, maybe a little longer. Known him, and he just always doted on his wife, just talked so positive about her, just loved her to death. Meanwhile, every time I ran into him, they were all huggy and kissy and holding hands, and they'd sit in church, and he'd sit with his arm around her. When I saw him the other day, I was a little saddened because they have aged immensely, especially she has. She's just really very, very frail, has had several health problems. When I went up and talked to him, she didn't really even raise. She's got the, you know, the quiver thing going on. But as he was having this dialogue with me, he had his arm wrapped around her and was just holding her, and he never let her go. And I sat there and looked at it, and I said, there it is. This is what God has designed. This is beautiful. This is what happens when two people pursue Jesus, because they have. They're great people. Two people pursue Jesus. They figure out that God has made us equal but different. We're on this journey together, and we're going to stay in it together until the end. And I want to tell you, in God's eyes, this frail, fragile woman is more beautiful than any hottie that ever ends up on TV. And we value that. And we want you to end up there. But God's way is the only way it works, because it's a picture of the gospel of Jesus and his love for us. And I just want to challenge you, ladies, deal with this, wrestle with this, fight with this. Figure out what it means in your home to submit to your own husband and live as one who voluntarily respects and supports his leadership and finds your perfect fit. And life will make sense, and it will work. Today, we're going to do something really special. I need to close and let the band come up, and we're going to worship for a few minutes. But we're going to go see a picture of something that's very much like the picture of a wedding ring. When I got married, I put a wedding ring on my finger that said, this woman is mine, is mine forever. I am dedicated to her, and I wear it as a sign of that, as a seal to that. In the same way, baptism in our churches is a sign and a seal of somebody who said, I am trusting Jesus. So after service today, we want to invite you to just, they'll close, we'll do a couple songs, they'll close, you go out the doors, you go right outside and turn to the right and just kind of follow the crowd as they're going. We're going to head to the swimming pool where we're going to hold baptism. Baptism is so incredible because it is a picture of the fact that Jesus died, he was buried, and he rose again for us. And a person who trusts Jesus has died to an old way of life, been buried, and is raised to a new way of life. And so it's a great thing to do as we talk about marriage because it, much like a wedding ring, is a sign and a seal of faith and a commitment and a covenant. And so we want you to join us for that. I'm going to pray. Our band's going to come out here. We're going to worship. We always end in worship because we believe everybody has a response. And the response to what God has said is, I will worship you. You are awesome, God, and I just love you. So we're going to worship. As we worship, we will be passing the offering. If you're a guest with us, please do not put this in. We do not want you to put anything in offering that's not for you. This service is our gift to you. But we do offering in the service because we believe it is an act of worship for those who are part of Genesis as we give back because God has given to us so much. God bless you. I'm going to pray. You can stand. You can sing with us. Don't forget, on the way out, ladies, we have a project for you that includes picking up a CD. Make sure you get one. Jesus, we love you. We praise you. I thank you for what you've taught us about the perfect fit that we have in each other. And I just pray today that you will help us as married couples to figure out that fit in our home. And Lord, those of us who aren't married, you will begin to build the character into our lives that will help us to be the men and women that will lead this nation and lead this world in honoring you with our lives. In your name I pray. Amen.